Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
What kind of camera you got? It looks amazing.
That is actually my iPhone 12 mini going through Camo Studio. I don't know if you ever it's an app that basically lets you turn your iPhone or iPad camera into your webcam.
Wow.
Which is like a thousand times better than any webcam out there. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I've noticed that like a lot of people who are doing YouTube stuff are using like 4K video, right? So
yeah. Pretty cool. Yeah, I have a Logitech 4K that's pretty good, but I find this camera is even better. So
yeah, and I've got like a plethora of iPhones around here anyway. Like, I've got some for work that do nothing. I use one to record on my 3D printer when I'm printing something, do time lapse and that kind of stuff. Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of More Than Just Code Podcast. My name is Tim Mitchell and I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined once again by Joe Shapilinski in Denver?
Boulder, actually. Boulder, Colorado.
Boulder, Colorado. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's going to be my first question is how did you end up in Colorado? Because you've been, last time we were talking, you were in New York, I think, right?
Yeah. It's been an interesting journey. We actually moved the day of the first case of COVID in New York is when I got on my plane to come here to Boulder, and they shut down the whole city of Boulder like 5 days later. So it's been a crazy adventure in a new city without being able to get out a whole lot for the first year or so of it. And then with the vaccine and everything, it's been a little better. But yeah, just came out here. My significant other had a job opportunity, and I had been coming out to Denver for 360 iDev, where we've seen each other several times in person. And so I knew the area pretty well. And so when she had an opportunity to have a job offer in Boulder, I thought, sure. I'd been there once before, just once to the city here, just on a separate trip. But I knew the area well enough. I knew some other iOS developers. I wouldn't be completely alone out here. And I thought it'd be a cool idea. And it worked out really well.
Cool. Yeah. And I guess you're a skier as well?
No, oddly enough, I do not ski or snowboard. I'm a little afraid of that. I did it once. I went up to Whistler one time and enjoyed myself, had a lesson, kind of learned it and thought to myself, okay, this is kind of nice. I get it, but I don't want to die. So I just don't quite trust myself with balancing type sports. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'd skied in high school and then I moved to Vancouver for 8 months, and my wife said to me, until you have benefits and coverage, you're not going skiing. So, I never even made it out to Whistler the entire time I was there, sadly enough, right? So
it's a beautiful place. Yeah.
And I don't ski anymore, so that's another story. All right. And I guess so. Mark Boulder is where Mark and Mindy were. That was the home of that show, right?
I think that is right. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Kind of makes me want to go back and check out the series and watch it again with that perspective. But yeah, I haven't watched it since it was on TV, like back in this, what was it, late 70s, early 80s?
You know, it's funny. I should tell you, first of all, too, this is not officially, but officially your fifth time on More Than Just Code. So Jaime's going to prepare you a nice little velour jacket with a 5 on it.
That's great. I didn't realize it had been that many times. That's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought about it too. Like, I think, cause we've done two at 360 iDev, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds right. Where else did we do the third one?
Maybe an NS North one year or? Yeah. I can't remember.
Not NS North. No, let me just log into my iPad.
Oh, on the streets of San Jose. I think.
Oh, right. Yeah. The street once. Episode. Yeah. Like I talked to you after the show. Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, yeah. That was a good one. Yeah. It was a good episode. I mean, like, you know, I was kind of hedging my bets because I didn't know whether we would be able to record, get into the podcast studio. We had booked it. I went every day. Like, I went Monday, tried to get in. No, nobody's around. I can answer your question. Tuesday, no, nobody's around. And then Wednesday, I went just after Randy Ritchie was there, actually. And I said, you know, can I? And they said, oh, the earliest day is like Thursday. So we booked it. And then, you know, the four of us went in and recorded. But so I, you know, Tuesday night was live near WWDC. So I had already brought a Rode mic. Mm-hmm. And I basically, every time I saw somebody that I knew, I'd say, hey, you want to be on the podcast for a second? Everybody said, yeah, surprisingly. Well, you know, not surprisingly, knowing our community, right?
So, exactly. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I remember you just kind of accosting me outside of whatever the name of that place was, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the place either. I
never remember the name of that. Yeah, but yeah, that's good stuff.
It was near WWDC. That's all that matters.
Right. Right. And it was during the week.
Yeah. For but, sure.
Yeah, I never actually went to the podcast studio, so I never really saw what that looked like. So it was a good facility.
You know, you think it's like some big highfalutin thing, but it was literally the end of a hallway. And there was like a wall, and then behind the wall was the actual studio itself. There was a picture on our if you look at the art for that show.
Okay.
Basically a table with four, you know, Shure SMB7-5 mics and a lady doing something right into Logic Pro. So they gave me like a Logic Pro file with the audio all built in and on a couple of USB sticks. And I just went and edited them. All right. So it was super, super simple, but yeah. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. And, you know, I don't know why I imagined it would be some sort of, you know, soundproofy kind of, you know, like you've got baffles behind you. Is that what those are? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. Just to make this room sound a little bit better, a little less echoey, I added a few on both sides. And then I have a curtain on the wall with the window.
Yeah.
That helped. I tend to think that helps quite a bit. Although I'm getting probably tons of reflections off this monitor in front of me anyway.
Yeah. But is that where the secret sauce is made for release notes?
Yeah. This is where I generally record when I'm not traveling or doing some other, then I have a separate little travel rig for that. But yeah.
You do. Okay. Yeah. I was curious about, like, I think we talked once about how you managed to edit your audio. Cause you and I think you had a separate channel for Charles and yourself.
Yeah. I have
a guest.
Yeah, I have an IO, an in-out box that lets me record separate channels, like coming in from different machines. And it used to be more complex. It used to involve a Mac Mini that I ran Charles through and things like that. But then I discovered Audio Hijack, and that really helps to be able to just route different audio to different channels. And so I can record him separately. But I do have him record his track now, because I find no matter how good you know, Zoom, Skype, whatever it is you're recording over, the audio is never quite as good as just coming right off the mic, right? So true. I'll have him record, then I just used my recording of him as a reference track to line up. And now I'm doing all my editing actually on Ferrite on the iPad, which is great. I recently switched over to that finally.
On which app?
It's called Ferrite.
Oh, Ferrite. Yeah. Well, here's a question I have about Ferrite. I tried it once for one episode, but I found the audio levels were really low.
Yes. Yeah. I find I had to kind of boost them a little bit. So I kind of process the audio first before I send it over to the iPad. I run it quickly through Isotopes tools, and it lets you do a few things like getting the levels a little more even, doing things like a little bit of reverb removal, you know, because there's a little bit of an echo coming out of Charles's room and mine here even, and other things like that, like removing breath and other kinds of artifacts. And then I send that to the iPad and I do all the editing there with the Apple Pencil. And that's the part I really like about it. The only thing missing from Ferrite in my mind is that it only does 1x speed for editing. And I really miss that from Logic, being able to just go twice as fast. And because I know our voices, I know our patterns well enough to where I can see the ums.
You can see the ums and the whatever. Yeah. In the pattern. Yeah. So, I mean, like for me though, I mean, I watched Jason Snell's video on how to use Ferrite, and maybe I'll link it in the show here, but on how to use to do editing. And I really liked his style of, you know, you get rid of all the empty space and then you pull everything forward, that kind of stuff manually. And it, I did like it. Well, I did find it super, super easy to edit in Ferrite. Just the levels were just too much for me. But I mean, cause what I do on, I'm sorry, folks who don't care about podcasting, but what I do is we get the separate tracks, you know, I sync them up and then I do a first pass and I look for things that are wrong, EQ everybody, balance everybody out. And then I go through and I do some editing. Like, you know, if we start talking about things we shouldn't be talking about, I'll just go and blank out that whole section. Mm-hmm. And then, but you know, I'll go through and look for lip smacks and ums, some of the ums, I'm not crazy about them, but you know, take the ones. And if somebody, like we have a thing on our show, if you say something wrong, just say, I'm going to say that again. And then, you know, unlike Tammy, I will remove that. Tammy likes it when I mess up, so she always leaves it in the show.
Right? Leave, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the beauty of being in the editor. You have the power to leave things, embarrassing things in there.
Well, that's why the last three episodes of the podcast we're doing together, I asked if I could edit them. So, you know, revenge is the best meal best served cold, right?
There you go.
But, yeah, anyway, so I learned audio production on tape, right? So for me, so I'm kind of like doing the old, you know, cut it with a razor and splice mm-hmm. it together kind of editing on the first pass. And then I bounce it down to a master, like, so that I don't have all three tracks. I don't know if you do that. And then I go back in with that one master. That's when I put in the music at the beginning and the voiceovers for the outros and stuff like that, right? But so I'm now dealing with one. And like you, though, I do the same thing. I set it up. Once I'm happy with how things sound, I flip it on to twice as fast and just whip through it. And that still takes, like, you know, like we sometimes talk for 2 or 3 hours.
Yeah.
You know, unlike you guys think you're hard like 30 minutes or something like that, right?
Yeah, pretty much. If we go too far beyond 30 minutes, I mean, I think our longest episode was like 40 minutes or something, or 42 or 3 at most. But usually if we're getting to that territory, then we think about like, okay, can we make an hour out of this? And then we'll split it into 2 weeks.
I think our shortest episode is around 40 minutes.
Yeah, so we try to keep it that way. And usually when we're interviewing someone, it'll end up being 2 episodes because we end up talking with the guests quite a bit. But yeah, that's always decided after the fact. Like I'll say, okay, we have an hour's worth of material. I'll split it where it makes logical sense to cut it.
Yeah, sure.
And we'll record the extra intro and outro for that. Yeah, but it's very interesting. I don't bounce down. I keep the audio on its, or this, you know, music track on its own separate track. And I kind of have that in a Logic template originally. And now I have it in a Ferrite template. So they're just kind of sitting there and then I can just move them to where they need to be depending on the length of the audio. But yeah, I don't mix down until it's done, like done.
So you do like one iteration of like both of you on, or two of you or three of you on a track on the whole thing. And then you just bounce from, you do the final MP3 from there.
Usually I go out to AIFF and then I'll run something like Forecast or something like that to turn it into an MP3. Yeah. Actually, I think with Ferrite now, I'm just using it sounds pretty good. It's MP3 exports. I think I'm using that directly, but then I still run it through like a tag editor so I can add all the, you know, artwork and different things of that nature. I'll do a lot more work with the chapter markers and things like that. I don't bother with that, generally speaking.
Yeah. Well, on Spotcast, I only do like a few of them, like just to mark spoilers because we talk about we do a lot of movie spoilers and stuff like that, right? So I want to basically give people a heads up, right? And then if I can remember to get the guys to tell me, they're going to go into spoiler territory. But you know, but when we do more than just code, we're, you know, especially if we're doing like, we're going to do the event, obviously. Maybe you and I'll talk about the event a bit today too. Mm-hmm. But when we do an event, you know, I normally break it down. I try to put as many chapter markers as I can, right? Because, you know, we've had a few. Some of our more loyal fans have been chomping at the bit for us to even add chapters to begin with. And then it makes sense once you get into it, you know?
Yeah, I think for a longer show, especially because there might be a whole section where it's like, well, I don't care about the Apple Watch and they're talking about it for 25 minutes, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that people use the chapters to, like, if they want to go back and re-listen to something we might've said, they can dive back in. So
that's true. Yeah. It's easier to find sections that you were referring to. It's true.
And if I had to go back and remix a show that didn't have chapters, I've been putting chapters in them too, right? So, because now that I've got, it's now a routine. I mean, so for me, like, you know, one night I'll do the first pass and then I'll take a break and go work or whatever and do something different. And then the next day I'll go in and do the second edit, the final edit, right? Mm-hmm. So usually by Saturday morning I've got, you know, something in the can that I can publish, you know, either Friday, late Friday, early Saturday morning kind of thing, right? And then depending on, you know, what my honey-do list looks like on the weekend, you may or may not get an episode, right?
Right.
Anyway, speaking of release notes, so I think the caption on release notes is, you know, talk about, we both shows talk about the business of app development. We talk about it more from a developer's perspective, but I'm always sort of like, the reason it's more than just code is because there is more than just writing code. Right. But you guys talk about the business of app development and all that kind of stuff, everything but the code, you say, right? So now's your chance to talk about the code, Joe. Go.
There's a reason we don't talk about code on the show. I never feel as confident talking about code as I do talking about other topics.
That's why I have Mark and Jaime on the show.
Yeah, they get pretty deep sometimes.
Yeah.
But it's cool. That gives you that flexibility. The more than just code means you can also talk about code when you want to. Every time we start getting into code, like, we either have to stop ourselves and say, oh yeah, that's a little code, or we'll hear from one of the audience members, like, hey, that was a little, a couple of people are like, hey, they're just making fun. They don't actually complain, but it's pretty funny. Like, hey, you actually got a little technical there, considering you're supposed to be everything but the code.
Yeah, one of our fans called it, she said, it's more than just code and sometimes code.
Yeah. And sometimes it really is just code.
It's just code, yes. But, or, yeah, I misquoted her, but anyway. So tell us about release notes. You're like, we're in our seventh year, so you guys must be like eight, I guess, right?
Somewhere around there, yeah. It'll be, I guess, May is our anniversary, I think, every year. But, you know, we've done our big milestone is that we've done every Monday we've had an episode, so we've never missed a Monday. So we're at four something right now. So
like a fresh episode every Monday, no repeats like us.
Yeah, no repeats, no like greatest hits. We've always had an episode every Monday. And like, let me look real quick. Yeah. The latest one is 435. So whatever divided by 52, that is, that's how long we've been doing it. So it makes it pretty easy for us to be reliable in that way. Like with the two of us just kind of check each other on that. And it's like, it's one of those things. It's like my stand goal on the watch now. I can't not do it because I'm so far in now. Like if we missed a Monday within the first year, it would have been much easier to just drop another Monday, but now it's sort of like, can't let it happen. So that's the sort of geek that I am, that I have to follow patterns like that. We've never missed a week, which is pretty crazy all this time. Now we sometimes record two episodes because we know one of us will be away the following week or things like that, and I think we've gone as far as banking two or three a few times for longer trips. But sometimes we'll just record on the road if it's like I'm at a conference, you know, or Charles is at a conference, then it's like, well, that'll make for good episode fodder, so yeah, just bring your microphone, we'll figure it out. And cool. So it's worked out pretty well over the years, but yeah, it can be pretty tedious when you're trying to hit that goal and trying to make sure you always hit it. You can't really have that option. Like you generally record on Thursdays and then the episode will go out on Monday. So I have a few days there of editing and Charles does the actual publishing. So keeps us on our toes. Yeah. So I try to get him an episode by Sunday night, no matter what.
Right. Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, yeah. So 2014 is when you started, or 2013?
That sounds right. Yeah.
So what was the genesis of you just met at the conference and...
Yeah, we met at 360 iDev, and we didn't actually end up talking. Like, we met, we were chatting, we went to a dinner together, and it wasn't until several months later that we actually, he wrote to me out of the blue and said, "Do you ever consider doing a podcast?" And I was like, yeah, kind of, but I didn't know what I wanted to talk about. And then we started bouncing ideas back and forth, and that's where we came up with the idea, well, there are lots of people talking about app development. You know, what else could we do? And that's when we thought, well, we're both sort of indie app makers trying to make a business. What if we talked about the money side of things and the businessy type stuff and the marketing, which neither of us were super comfortable with, but we thought, okay, it'll help us learn if we have to come up with topics. And we honestly thought we had like 20, 30 episodes in us at most. And here we are at 435. So, you know, things happen.
Yeah. I mean, like I often tell the story, like about three or four episodes in, I realized, what have I bitten off here, you know. and we've been pretty consistent about trying to get this year's been an exception, but we've been pretty good about getting an episode out every year, every week at least something. And that's why I started doing these episodes, is buy me some time, you know.
Right.
But I was going to say, like, you know, so, but I often quote Charles's talk. I don't know if you remember at NS North in Ottawa. He talked about it was the beginning of the indie apocalypse. And he had that chart on the wall, like a big circle and a big blue circle and a little red, tiny red dot. And the tiny red dot were the developers that were actually making money developing apps.
Yes. Yes.
That was a wake-up call for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and it turned out to be very prophetic. I mean, he was right on the money there, and it's still that way. Handful of developers, really, that are making most of the money still, and most of those are now large companies. There's a handful, very, very, very tiny little handful of indies that are actually making their living, depending on how you define living. It's pretty amazing how that market shifted over time. It's kind of the natural progression, but in a lot of ways, it didn't feel like it was going to be that way back then when he was talking about that. It's still.
Well, how long have you been in Colorado now?
I've been here for a year and a half, right? Almost 2 years.
So how do you find the cost of living difference between New York City? You were in Manhattan before?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny because cost of living is all relative, I guess. Like in New York, I was able to live. I'm probably spending about the same amount that I was spending in New York. The difference is that I'm living a much better lifestyle than I was before. I'm not dealing with, typical New York problems. I can own a car, for instance, and afford to park it. these kinds of things that, I have a, apartment complex here that has probably four times the square footage as what I had in New York. And so things of that nature, it's just much more comfortable living here. And the pace of this entire place is just so much more to my liking. I mean, I grew up in big cities. I've always lived in cities, but and I never thought like I could live in a smallish town, 100,000 people or so, but it's worked out pretty well so far. I have to admit, as I get older, that this feels a little better to me.
So you're from Philadelphia, right?
Yeah, Philadelphia originally, but right in the heart of the city. So I grew up in, a city, very urban environments, and I was always comfortable with that. But, as you get older, sometimes, not hearing fire engines all night every night is a good thing.
Well, Carol and I just went to New Brunswick to visit her family after like 2 years of not going anywhere, right? And the pace of life out there was so much more relaxed. I mean, they still have COVID, but they've had like seven cases in the town we were in.
Wow, the whole town has seven. Wow.
Seven. Yeah. And they were people coming to visit, right?
Right. Someone had to bring it. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, so the whole Eastern provinces, have had, they were in their own bubble for the longest time, could travel between them because they had very low case. I mean, now they're starting to see some cases out there. But yeah, it's like the whole attitude is completely different. Like we were actually able to go out places and we went into stores and stuff like that with masks. We went and saw a movie in a theater.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
What a concept.
I know. We went and saw Free Guy. Jonathan and I, we're actually sitting next to each other in a movie theater instead of like we do this podcast for last 3 years in separate, like he's way over there like 50 kilometers away, right? So which is 30 miles.
Yeah. Yeah, we said translate for the dumb Americans. Yes.
Yeah. Actually, that was another question I was gonna ask you, but I've forgotten what it is now. Oh well. Yeah. So today is as we record, it's September 14th, and we just had an iPhone event.
Yes.
Which I think, rumors and being what they are, what did you think? I mean, we weren't expecting to see a Mac, but we got the Mini that they were rumoring about. So what did you think about it?
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised actually that they did the iPad this time around, because that means if they are going to do a later event for the Mac, like say October or November, they said there might be a Mac event later on, then they'll really only have the Mac left. That's the only thing they didn't really
update. They didn't do a pro iPad though.
Yeah, but the pro iPad came out this year, right? Earlier this year. So I
would the M1, that's right.
Yeah. So maybe they would do an M1X iPad 2 or M2, whatever you're going to call the chip. So it really left it like, oh, they might have some significant Mac news if they're going to do that. Now, knowing our luck, maybe they'll just have a press release, but I can't think that. I have to think that this next laptop is going to be more of the iMac level of redesign, and therefore they're going to want to show it off. you know, I think that this 16 inch and 14 inch pro level laptop is going to be very different from the original M1 MacBook, which is really just the Intel MacBook with different innards. So that part I thought was interesting. And I do love that iPad mini. I wish I had a use case for it. I've only ever owned one mini iPad. It was the very first one. I thought I'd switch to that, see how it worked with the smaller device and everything else. And it was one of those things where I was like attached to it emotionally, but I didn't really like it as like the smaller size was just smaller enough that I didn't find it as useful. Like I would think like editing my podcast on that would be a little harder. Right now I have the 13 inch pro and that extra space is really useful. It's funny. I always want the smallest laptop possible, but the largest iPad possible.
I had the first two minis. Like, what I liked about them is they fit in my winter pocket, like in my jacket. So I could basically just have an iPad mini. You're supposed to have to carry the little MERS, as my friend called it, right. with the little iPad in it. But, And I had a 12 when it first came out, and I really didn't like the size. It was just too big. But you know, mind you, I'm a MacBook Air user, MacBook Pro 13 user, and it's virtually the same size, the 12, right? So
yep.
I'm now on an 11. Sometimes when I'm doing drawings and stuff like that, I regret not having the larger iPad. But for the most part, I mean, I love it with the Magic Keyboard, and it's small, and and the pencil. I've been using the pencil to write cursively on the screen instead of typing like an animal, right? So now I write like an animal. But I've been doing 3D sculpture on the iPad, which is kind of cool. I'm as a traditional artist, you can see this Venus de Milo behind me, right? Mm-hmm. I just printed that on that's from a scan of the actual piece. Right?
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so it's got all the marks and stuff where then it's been dropped and kicked around and stuff like that. So it's kind of cool. But so I'm, you know, as a traditional sculptor, I've always, you know, I don't have space. You need space for that kind of stuff, right? So now I found this app called Nomad, and it's very much like Blender in a sense, but you use your pencil to draw, and you basically, you build up clay with your pencil, which is really kind of cool. And you slice it and you cut it, and just like you would with traditional sculpture materials, right? So, except it's in, you know, and then I can print it on my 3D printer, right? So,
right. Yeah, well, that's really cool, though. Yeah, I always feel, and that was the thing watching even the mini demonstrations of videos that they were showing. They were showing the pilot with it strapped to his leg, and they were showing like the person up on the roof who's working on, you know, this kind of AR experience thing. And I think a lot of people overlook how many really cool pro iPad apps out there that actually exist. And those are probably doing fairly well as businesses, but they're not the typical indies that we talk to at our conferences. And so people forget that those things are out there. And even like the analysis of your sports swings and things of that nature. It really is remarkable how powerful the iPad is at doing certain things where you would never take a laptop, right? And so, yeah, I went up back to the 12.9, whatever, 13-inch iPad this year because of that Liquid Retina XDR display that they had. Yeah. And I thought that would be a significant enough difference to kind of push me over the edge. I've been on the 11 for a long time too. I think I personally prefer the slightly smaller size, but I hear what you're saying. Like I like the full size keyboard better on the 13. And I do like, I mean, that screen is just absolutely gorgeous. So if they get that screen into the 11 next year, then it'll be something to consider for the next iPad I get whenever I get it.
I think that's exactly the reason why. I mean, I had just bought the 2020 iPad, whatever this is, A13 or whatever, A14. And you know, with the Face ID, which I love, you know, anything with like biometric ID, I love that kind of stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I moved away from the mini, because the mini just took too long to get Touch ID. Right.
Right.
And I've got a Surface on here. So the pencil feels like it's got a bit of drag. So when I draw on it, it's not plastic on glass, you know. I think you studied art, right? So you know where I'm coming from, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You want that Conte crayon on you know, on rough paper kind of feel, yeah, right? Exactly. We're not there yet, but
yeah. So you can do that with haptics. That'd be amazing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I mean, so yeah, and they always throw me when they say iPad. Like, you know, they started going on about iPad. I'm like, and then they said A13, and I'm like, wait a minute, what happened to the M1? And then I, you know, it takes me a minute to remember, right. Okay, that's the iPad Pro. Okay, Pro, right, versus
Pro, right.
Regular. I broke down a couple of months ago and bought an iPad, or M1 Air. And so I'm looking at you now on my 2020 iPad Pro 13, but I have an M1 Air over there, and I just go between them, and the Air is so much nicer. It never gets hot, you know. It's lickety split. I haven't really, you know, sort of kicked its tires too much with Xcode and stuff like that, but it's a nice machine. Like, you know,
even, oh yeah, yeah. Know, yeah, they, okay. I was shocked at the battery life difference. I don't even think about charging anymore at all. Like, I can go to, you know, now that I can go to like an outdoor cafe in the nice summer months, I could just literally sit there and work an 8-hour day in Xcode and no problem. Battery's still fine. Right? Yeah, not even close to possible with my Intel. Any of my Intel laptops, I always had was like, I got 4 hours tops. Yeah.
I find the same thing, like, especially with this guy, if I go sit and I have a couch just over there, which is what I'm gesturing at, right? That's where I do, that's where the money's made. This is my office where I'm at. When I'm at work, I'm sitting here or doing a podcast, right? But yeah, lots of fun. But what do you think about the watch stuff and Fitness Plus? Are you into that whole world, or?
I want to get into Fitness Plus. I think the meditation might help me. I'm not into, like, you know, the HIIT stuff and dance and things of that nature. What I want to see them do, and I'm hopeful now because they did the winter sports prep kind of workouts. I want to see them, like, my favorite cardio is swimming. So I have a pool here, and obviously you think, well, how do you do Fitness Plus videos for swimming? But they could at least do dry land exercises for swimmers, right? There's lots of specific cardio and weight training things that are out there for swimmers that I would love to see them do. And I think that would probably be my entry point into Fitness Plus. I think it's a great idea. I love the idea of the videos out there, but I haven't really dug into them yet. I'm hoping with the meditation, maybe I'll try the Pilates too. Who knows? I think it's a cool add-on. I would have gotten it anyway because I'm on the one subscription. So it's one of those things where I don't even think about paying for it. It just kind of is. And the whole family gets it, which is great. I think their additions to it. I like that they're investing in it, and you can see that already that it's taking off for them clearly. And it's going to be a huge seller of Apple Watches, especially now that they're making it, you know, work out with your friend, 32 of your friends, kind of a thing. It's going to be a real peer pressure point for a lot of people to get watches.
That's to Peloton and people like that.
Yeah. It's hard to say, but Peloton doesn't, you know, they're starting to discount their bikes. They're starting to show signs that the competition is coming, creeping in on them. And it's classic Apple, right? I mean, they're the kind of people that can do a breadth of experience that, like, you know, if you're coming in at, like, Sonos, right, who came in and they're just going to do speakers, right? And it's like, well, Apple can walk into this market and do HomePods and then also do 10,000 other audio related things that you can't do. And that's kind of where they, you know, whenever they pick a market, you're kind of in trouble for that reason, because Apple can just, they have so many resources that they can just enter a market, and they don't need the money on Fitness Plus, so they can afford to just throw money at it indefinitely. Whereas, yeah, so I think a company like Peloton is going to be in trouble probably in the next couple of coming years.
Well, I mean, like, the thing with the watch is, like, every platform's needed a killer app of some type, right, to sort of get that market. And I think health is one thing that they're focusing on with the app, with the watch, and now fitness. By the way, you can do swimming on your watch. I mean, my wife does Pilates, and or not what she does, Aquafit they call it. I don't know what you call it in the States, but you know, you get in the water and you do a workout, right? And the problem is that the indoor swimming is doing laps. Right. And then outdoor, there's an outdoor open water swimming, I guess that's because I went with her one time a couple of months ago, and it was brutal to work out. Right. But I wore my watch the whole time.
Yeah, no, I do wear my watch when I swim. But I'm just thinking, like, for Fitness Plus to watch an instructor while you're swimming. Would be
Maybe when they have Apple. Yeah, yeah.
With maybe they'll have Apple, like, swim goggles. Right? Yeah, exactly.
That'd be kind of cool. Head camera, right? Yeah,
I want them to do more swimming workouts, actually, though, because, I went snorkeling recently. A couple weeks ago, I was in Maui, and, I did the open water swim thing, but it's still expecting you to swim out there. Like, it's saying I was doing breaststroke or freestyle. I'm like, no, I was snorkeling. I would like to see them do something with that, where they could say, like, other types of activities that are happening in the water than just traditional laps would be good.
And need a Jacques Cousteau mode or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So another thing you've always talked about too is the mini phone. So because you were an SE guy, right? You were waiting for the SE to come out. And so what do you think about these minis that they're doing?
I have my 12 mini now. I love it. I will upgrade to the 13 mini. I kind of wish they still had a green because I'm a big green guy. But I'm looking at the Midnight now, which isn't quite black. It looks like a really, really deep blue to me. Even that kind of off-white, whatever they're calling Starlight, is interesting too. My biggest fear this year was that they were going to come up with a Pro that was so compelling that I wouldn't want the mini anymore. But to me, I've kind of felt for a long time that the camera is good enough. I like to take photographs, but I'm constantly like, I'm on the new Glass platform up there. You know, I don't know if you've heard of Glass, this new photo sharing. It's sort of like Instagram, but it's a paid subscription social thing with no ads. It's great because it's just all photographers, like real people who are taking nice shots. It's not just people, you know, influencers. ever since I joined that, the one comment I get constantly with my photos is, oh my God, that's a mini. they can't believe that the mini is taking photos that are that good. And so to me, the camera is good enough and they have improved it on the new one, which is great. And the ProMotion thing is kind of important to me on an iPad, but I'm not so sure on my phone that it's as necessary. So I'm going to keep I'm going to stick with the mini this time around. I feel like it's the perfect size iPhone. I really wish that it had a future. I do understand the rumors out there that Apple's not selling enough of them and they're going to do the second model year because this was kind of an S year anyway. But I don't know. I mean, I kind of hope it sticks around. I'm hoping against hope that maybe they'll sell more of them this year, but probably not. And I'll probably have to go back to a big phone, but I'm one of the weirdos who wants a small phone, but not a cheap phone.
I wonder if that's because all the phone companies are giving you a deal on the 12, or like the 12, I want to say 12, but I mean, it'll be 13 now, right? As we record, but like they're giving you a deal on that. Do they really give you a deal on the mini? Like, do they give you money back when you buy a mini?
Right. Yeah. it is cheaper in price slightly, but that, like I said, I wouldn't matter. I wouldn't care if it was the same price. Like if I could get the Pro camera into the mini, that would be my ideal iPhone.
Yeah.
Ideal. But I think part of what happened with the mini, honestly, is COVID. I think that people didn't see it in their hands and everyone ordered their iPhones last year online. And so they didn't really get a sense for size. And so like if the stores had been open and people could have walked into the store and kind of handled it a little bit, I think it might have made a difference. There's certain Apple products that you just have to have in your hand before you quite understand them. And the mini is definitely one of them. Like as soon as I opened that thing up and I started playing with it, I'm like, oh, this is so much better. It's just like obviously the right size phone for me. Because I don't do a lot of pro level stuff on my phone. You know, I do phone stuff. If I really want to do something complicated or serious, I'm always going to my MacBook Pro or my iPad.
Yeah, I mean, I'm the same way, but I love the camera on the 12 Pro. Like, I'm constantly shooting with it now. So, I even tried to capture a moose the other day at the farm, but but that was not to be. But it's surprising, like what you can do with the camera on this thing. And you know, I you're right. I do know what Glass. I think my friend Greg's on there. So, I did take a quick peek at it.
Yeah.
But that's cool. What else did they talk about today at the show? The watch. Yeah, the new watch with the display that wraps around, right?
Yeah, that was kind of funny because a lot of the rumors had, you know, this watch design that was going to be a flat edge, sort of like the new iPhones. And it's kind of interesting whenever the rumors are that far wrong, it's always, I'm like, okay, was that a deliberate leak of something or is that a future watch that somebody misinterpreted? There's always like the possibilities of why that information came out that was so wrong. And you show all these 3D mockups of what it might look like. But in retrospect, it does make a lot of sense. Like, yeah, they were talking about how the curvature is more flattened out and then the base of the actual screen is now rectangular, but it's inside the casing. So it basically makes it more resistant to cracks. Not that was a huge problem with the watch anyway, but I guess people are breaking their screens. So it's also more dust resistance. The watch, it wasn't that big an upgrade. It seems like they didn't really add any new sensors to it. The new sizes are really nice, though. It does seem like the screen, they barely made the watch ever so slightly, like 1 millimeter thicker or larger diagonally, but it's mainly in reduction of bezels that you get the screen real estate bump. So it looks nice, looks pretty compelling. I always get the titanium watch, so that's a bit of an expensive proposition. We'll see if, luckily I don't have to make that decision yet because that's going to be not coming out probably. I'm thinking around November because right now on the website, you can't even price one out. There's precious little detail about, they have like a webpage up there about the Series 7, but nothing on like what it would actually, you know, take to order one. So I think when they say later this fall, they mean like maybe December 20th.
On the corner of my eye, I noticed that, you know, on the edge, you could see part of the display too, which is why I was talking about the wraparound, right?
So, oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so, I guess if the actual LCD panel wraps on the corner, then that, maybe that's where all those folded phone rumors were going towards, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think they're doing a lot of experimentation lately with screens, and I think an item like the watch, where they sell far fewer of them, when we're talking about much smaller panels, it's easier for them to experiment a little bit than they can on something like the iPhone, which, yeah, because everyone was saying, like, I think there was a tweet already from Samsung, like, hey, we've been doing 120 hertz, you know, refresh rate forever, and it's like, Renee Ritchie was like, yeah, well, that's because you were willing to settle for a much crappier screen. And you're doing it in much smaller volumes than Apple has to. When Apple's selling 14 million of these things in a quarter, it's like, I can't even begin to imagine the logistical nightmare it is to keep all those parts in stock, you know?
Sure. Do you want to switch to the hot seat?
You're sure.
I'm sure you'll come up with all kinds of tangents. Yeah. And I get to ask you some arty questions too, which is great. So I get the first question is, what's your motto?
Wow. This probably changes every other week. So yeah, I'd say my motto is don't stand still. You know, always be moving in some direction, hopefully not backwards.
Okay, cool. And who are your heroes in real life?
That's a great, you know, I've been trying to get away from the concept of heroes lately. I did a talk at 360 iDev recently where I suggested that heroes are dangerous in real life compared to like the Marvel universe, because heroes are humans and they tend to mess up. And so you end up in a situation where someone you really admired does something really stupid, which seems to be happening with increasing frequency lately. And then you end up trying to defend somebody who really shouldn't be defended. And so, yeah, lately I've been kind of moving away from heroes per se that are actual people and moving towards more abstract ideas. Like whoever came up with the vaccine for this virus is my hero, right? Like people in a lab whose names we'll never know. Those are the kinds of people that are my heroes.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if it's like the hero in the sense of Iron Man or whatever. Right. It's just, you know, who inspires you?
Inspires you, right.
Yeah, I mean, the question was written a long time ago. So what words or phrases do you misuse regularly?
Misuse regularly, literally, definitely is one of my big ones. I can't stop saying, no matter how much I know literally, I'm wrong using it that way. That's a good question.
I think you're figuratively wrong.
That's probably my big one. I have lots of, I have a really, really terrible tendency towards hyperbole. I get it from my dad. So everything is like 87 million when it's really 10. You know, like I just like to, yeah. I like the art of exaggeration. I'm a huge, you know, Mark Twain fan. So, you know, I like using those kinds of literary devices, understatements, things of that nature. But I use them so much in casual conversation that people often take me literally and then, you know, think I'm just pulling numbers out of my butt when I'm like, no, I just meant that as a massive exaggeration on purpose.
Okay. What's your favorite occupation?
Oh, it would be musician if I could make a living doing that. That's exactly what I would be doing, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. You've been doing it for a while, obviously, right?
Been playing since, yeah, I was, took piano lessons at like 7 or 8 years old, picked up the bass when I was 11 or 12. And yeah, so it's been quite a while playing. Don't do it enough, but never enough, especially with COVID. It's like, haven't been able to play with other people much.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a 360 I did last month, we did James Dempsey. We did a little bit of a Breakpoints jam, and that worked out really well. And it was just amazing to be back on a stage and playing in front of people again. It's been too long.
Yeah. So, but it was the your other band, Air Supply? No, not Air Supply.
Airplane Mode. Yeah.
Airplane mode. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. We haven't played it for forever ever since I moved out here. That would have made it hard anyway. But, you know, as far as I know, Dave is still recording and writing songs and whatever. But, and I'm more than happy to record with him whenever. And whenever he comes out here to Denver, we could play a show or two. Or I go back to New York, sure, whenever that, yeah, becomes more possible.
Okay. Who's your favorite hero of fiction?
Ah, fiction. Lately I've been thinking of one of my favorite fictional characters is Yossarian from Catch-22.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just love Joseph Heller's sense of humor and the idea. Like Kurt Vonnegut was another big fan of, yeah, from, you know, person I was a fan of. I just love the way that they can find the humor in the most absurd and most absolute dark places of humanity. And I've always found that character, like the fact that he's constantly putting these weird, precarious positions and the way he finds his way out of it is fascinating to me. So, yeah. And I rewatched the movie recently, a few years ago, and Alan Arkin played the part so well. It's just, I don't know if the movie was a successful translation of the book, but I did enjoy it on last watching of it. The first time I watched it, I'm like, this isn't really working.
They did a Catch-22 TV show recently, too. I don't know if you saw that.
I did not see that. Yeah, I wanted to, and I, for whatever reason, I never got around. There's way too much TV mail these. I can never catch up to all the stuff that's out there. I don't know how you folks do it on this podcast, how you keep up with that many shows. Half the time, I'm like, I'm still watching this one from 2 years ago.
Yeah, well, the secret is we up until recently, we were actually watching the show about 5 minutes before we started recording.
Oh, wow.
Because like we record on Thursday nights, and the show comes out here in Canada on Thursday night, right, for free, right?
Right.
So now we've all switched to using Crave, so we can watch it in advance, which is the HBO Max to the Americans. But
right, right.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I learned to read because of Kurt Vonnegut. I was in like probably second year university, and I didn't realize that I looked at books before, and I did all the assignments in class and stuff. I mean, I got 50% in an English class once, because it just wasn't something that I was really into. And somebody handed me Breakfast of Champions, and it just spoke to me, right? And I learned how to let my head go and get into the book, and spend a lot of time, with Vonnegut and that kind of stuff. It's funny. It's different. I've read a couple of the books again recently, and they don't seem to hit the same notes that they did when I was like 20 something, right? So
interesting. Yeah, that happens a lot. I remember reading like John Updike when I was in high school, and my teacher saying, you're not going to get that yet. Like, read that again when you're 40. because it was about divorce, and it was about like adult themes that I like, you just don't have any reference point for that yet. And yeah, I think certain books hit you at certain times in your life. But yeah, no, Vonnegut was definitely that. That was my entryway into wanting to read outside of school, right? Like I had the books I was assigned at school, and then he was the first one. I'm going to read everything this guy writes. And I would just start reading that on the side. Yeah.
And because I got into the sci-fi stuff, I mean, Sirens of Titan. What was the other one about the Tralfamador?
Slaughterhouse-5.
Yeah, Slaughterhouse-5. Yeah, yeah. And then that got me, that was my gateway into Heinlein and Asimov and all that kind of stuff, So I hope they don't ruin Foundation. That's all I'm worried about.
Yeah, only have a few weeks, right? We'll find out if they do or not.
Well, they did a Brave New World show a few months ago, or last year, I guess. And it was okay. It was very produced, right? It looked nice and that kind of thing, but I didn't quite get the same messages that I got when I read it. It's more about how you could create people in a test tube, and how, because back then that was not a possibility, right? Today it's like I have two nephews,
right,
because of that technology, right?
Right.
And how you could, how your genes are put together can create a different class of people, right? And how that sort of broke down didn't come out in the show at all. It was sort of like these people have privileges and those ones are just dumb, like that's how they kind of didn't have the same messages to me that the original book had, right? So
it's a shame.
Well, that I'm hoping, and I remember reading Foundation obviously, and the Foundation, all the robot series, they're all different, right? Like the first ones are written in the 50s and they have a very sort of 50s sci-fi flavor to them, but they're still compelling stories, and I'm worried that they're going to just sort of paint it with one brush and.
Right. Right. It's an interesting challenge because you want them to have a unified feel to them, but at the same time, you want to stay faithful enough to the books. I don't know. Yeah. It's a really hard challenge. And some books aren't meant to be filmed. Like a lot of people complain about the Lord of the Rings films, and I'm like, they're about as good as you can make if you ignore the fact that if you filmed the book, it would be a really, really boring film. It'd
be like a year long.
Yeah. It'd just be people walking around the forest most of the time. Like that's really compelling when you're reading it, but it doesn't, visually it doesn't work, and so, entire battles that took place in one paragraph end up being a half hour of the movie. it's just a translation is always going to be a translation, but it'll be interesting to see. I'm hopeful because Apple TV Plus has come out of the gate with, I think they've done better than most people expected with their early crop of shows. So hopefully this one will be a star. We'll see.
Cool. What's your most prized possession?
Oh, that's easy. It's over here on my side. It's a bass that was made for me by a guy named Dale Bluebond, who is a luthier in Philadelphia. And it was like a, you know, I was a bass player from an early age, and I had my little starter basses, you know, and I always played left-handed upside down, kind of goofy with my strings backwards. And my brother met this guy who was, you know, he had a repair shop above a cleaner's, his father's cleaner store. And he would make custom basses for people as well. And he made most of his money on repairs, and he would basically make these basses out of love and not charge all that much, but they were the most amazing pieces of wood craftsmanship you could possibly imagine. And so I started hanging out at his shop. I would just show up in there and be like, hey, that's cool, let me play your bass, you know. And he was fascinated with the way I played, and he'd hear me play because I could just pick up his right-handed basses and play them upside down. And one day he said, you know, when are you going to make a bass for me, you know, when am I going to make one for you, you know? And I said, well, how much would that cost? And we went back and forth, and he like basically made it at cost for him, you know, because he just wanted to see me have one. And so while he was making that bass, just before he finished it, he and his wife were driving on a road in the evening in Philadelphia. It's a particularly windy road called the West River Drive. And they got a drunk driver, came and hit them, killed them both. And so this is the last bass he ever made. Basically, he wasn't quite finished it. His apprentice just did the lacquer on it and put the electronics on it for me. And so it's been in my possession ever since then. That was 20 plus years ago. That's the thing that if I'm going to run into the building for anything other than the cat and, you know, people, that I would run in the burning building for this thing. Yeah.
Well, that's a good question. I should change the question to what would you run into a burning building again? So you play it like you're like McCartney, you play backwards. Like you pull with you fret with your right hand and you pluck with your left. Is that
pluck with my left? Yeah. And my strings are backwards too. So
low E's on the bottom?
On the bottom. Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So it's nice because I can pick up someone.
The Hendrix bass.
And there are a few people that play like that. It just comes from ignorance. Like when I first picked up a bass for the first time, I just flipped the right-handed one upside down, and I just assumed that's how it was done. I didn't realize the strings were going to be the other way. And then by the time I got my first left-handed bass, they're like, oh, you're playing this backwards. And I said, well, can you fix the strings for me? Because I'd much rather keep playing this way.
Yeah.
And it just stuck. And this one was made for me that way. And anytime I buy a store-bought bass, I buy a left-handed one, and then I have to have them make a new nut for me to flip it backwards.
I was going to say, yeah, because the tension on the strings is different, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you just get a different nut made, and it works out. But it's nice too, because like acoustic guitars, I just flip them upside down. It's no big deal. I just play right-handed acoustic. So as long as it doesn't have a cutaway.
That's cool. Yeah. I finally got a Rick myself.
Love those things.
But there's an amazing story about the Paul McCartney Rickenbacker. I don't know if you know it, but and because you think of the influence the Beatles had at the time, right, which was nothing. He like there's a McCartney issue Rickenbacker you can get, you know, right-handed. But the headstock's upside down because McCartney, if you look at his bass in the Beatles, right, Rickenbacker wouldn't make him a bass with, they wouldn't make him a flipped headstock.
Huh.
So he's got a left-handed headstock, or right-handed headstock on a left-handed bass. Left-handed
bass.
So it's like you, he's playing it upside down. Kind
of. That's so funny that they wouldn't do that for him. Yeah. Hey, who are you? Yeah.
Paul who?
Yeah. Now they'd be falling over anybody. You know,
like, to make that bass. So what's cool is now you can, there was a reissue, right? So I can buy it for the right hand. So I'm playing it right handed like normal, but the headstock's flipped
backwards, right?
To match McCartney's, right?
That makes sense. Yeah.
Ironically, right? Now they'll do it. You know, and I should have bought that bass. It's one of those, you know, my wife and I have a rule. If you see it and it says, take me, I'm yours, buy it. Because the minute you walk out of that store, you'll never see it again, you know?
That's right. That's right.
So we started doing that, which is how I ended up with this bass. I went into, we have a store here called 12th Fret, which is like sells consignment gear and new gear and all that kind of stuff. And it's all the top stuff. Mm-hmm. I walked in one day and there was this Rickenbacker bass, and I sent her a text message saying, hey, I found a Rick. And she says, how much is it? And I told her how much it was. She says, well, you have a birthday coming. perfect, you know. sold. No Christmas, no birthday for me this year, right? So
that's really cool.
Yeah, finally got a Rick. But I'm a hobbyist bass player. I'm actually a guitarist, but yeah, so lots of fun. And I've been wrestling with the idea of how to do virtual COVID playing. Like I went and bought a set of drums, or like a Roland set of drums, so I could learn. I've been learning how to play drums because my drummers are all, you know, locked away, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's happened to me when I first moved from Philly to California. I suddenly had no one to play with, and so I did the same thing. I got like, you know, all kinds of plugins, and I bought my first guitar then, mm-hmm. and actually learned how to play chords properly. And like, I just had to record by myself, you know, and just did whatever I could. And luckily I had a brother who was a drummer. So I kind of watched him and kind of knew the basics of drumming. So I found some college kid, had a Roland kit, you know, a cheap little electric pad kit. And I just bought that and started playing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Drumming is amazing for letting out your frustrations. I don't understand why drummers are angry. Like they're always coming up. Like if I could beat things all day for a living, then the rest of my day would be pretty happy.
Yeah, it is a full body workout too. I mean, like it's interesting to sort of learn how to play. I mean, I can basically do, you know, standard four on the floor bat pattern, but that's about as far as I've gotten, really. Mm-hmm. You know, let's see. What can I ask you now? You already done that. Yeah. Oh, I want to ask you one question that comes over from the other podcast. Because as somebody who studied art, and like myself, you probably appreciate where this question comes from. Mm-hmm. And the question on the show is form or function, but the real meaning is, and you and I both know that form follows function. According to Mies van der Rohe. So what's your answer to the form and function question?
Yeah, well, you can't have one without the other, right? So it really is making sure they're serving each other. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges of design, really. I think a lot of people, I keep, as someone who worked as a designer for many years before I started coding, now whenever a designer hands me something, I always have my way of looking at it, which is like, well, all right, where's the mock-up with, you know, the body font size at 24 point? You know, what's going to happen to this design when we set this accessibility, you know,
and, yeah.
You know, or how does this serve the, you know, like you made me a pretty picture, right? And I think it's still way too much. There's way too much of that going on in the design world. People who are making pretty pictures instead of saying like, hey, did you read the Hig at all? I don't care if it's like Kotlin or whatever platform you're on, like read the interface guidelines, and like you're drawing you want this pixel perfect mock-up, and you're drawing me a nav bar that's 5 pixels taller than the actual iPhone's nav bar. It's like that is, do you want me to build this in this crazy custom way? I'd have to do it. Or can I just use, you know, and so, yeah, it's funny. Like, I really feel like not enough designers think enough about the function of what the programmer has to do in order to implement that thing. Right. And so, yeah, when you're thinking of a design, part of you wants to say, go nuts and open your mind and be free. You know, it was that old quote by Kurt Vonnegut. He said, you know, of course, science fiction authors come up with the most incredible ideas because they don't have to worry about the science part. They don't have to worry about it actually working. You know, like Jules Verne could write about a submarine before it was ever invented because he just thought boat underwater. He didn't have to solve that problem. But I do think there's benefit, especially when you're making products and when you're making things that are actually out there in the real world for actual people to use, then that has to be a consideration. You're not making art anymore. You're making something to be used by a human. And so, yeah, I think you can't concentrate on either one of them too much. You have to always let one complement the other, if you will.
So as somebody who's come into development as well, you've been through the sort of auto layout nightmares that we had for several years till they finally figured it out. And then as soon as they figure it out and they've got it down to a science, they come out with Swift UI. What do you think about Swift UI and its sort of promise of like a device agnostic language?
Yeah, I think that is the right direction. I think we're still years away from it being the practical reality. It's sort of like when I started learning code like 2 years before Swift happened. And I'm so glad that I still know Objective-C because it still comes up. And so I'm glad that I learned, you know, how to do auto layout code before SwiftUI came around, because that's going to come in handy for many more years. There's no, you know, you can't build a full app without jumping down into a different framework at some point still. But having said that, I love the idea of SwiftUI. I love the idea of separating, you know, it's the old CSS HTML idea where it's like how it looks should be separate from how it, you know, functions. And so I like that in theory. I like that you're basically building smaller files constantly. You're building a single view and keeping that in its own place. But yeah, there's still too many places, especially in the contract work that I'm doing, where I can't use, I'm stuck on iOS 13. And so it's like, well, 13 can use some SwiftUI, but not all of it. And so it's this constant battle. I will be happy when I can build an entire app that just works on all of Apple's platforms in SwiftUI. Like, I could see where they're headed with it, but I think we're still a long ways before it gets there.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's sort of like, you know, I've always joked about the fact that Photoshop or Adobe is going to come out with iPhone Creator 1.0, you know, sort of thing. Like you've probably been around long enough to know that some of the stuff you do in Photoshop, you had to do with like three applications in the past, you know, or with lots of baling wire and jury rigging, right?
All right.
Yeah, I mean, so it's interesting, like to sort of see, you know, that you can take the same chunk of code and put it out on an iPhone or Apple TV or a watch or a Mac. You know, maybe just add the menu on the Mac and that kind of stuff for some of those paradigms. But I think it's interesting that you can have one sort of design idea, right? I mean, because like you mentioned Pixel Perfect before, and that's always been a nightmare in any kind of coding, whether it's web or mobile. But I mean, the idea of that's where I think the logo should go, and that's where I say it should go, and it has to go there. And you can imagine all these crazy art directors we dealt with in the past, right? But I'm the art director, you know?
That's right. I say it's 16-point type. I'm like, yeah, but if we just use 17, that would save me hours. Because yeah. That's the standard.
Nobody's going to be able to read your 8-point type right. On this phone, right?
Exactly.
Especially with accessibility, right?
So, yeah, in dark gray on light gray background. Yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of, if you've seen the Monty Python sketch, Michelangelo's Last Supper.
Oh, I don't know. I probably have. Idol. Yeah, remind me. I may have seen it.
John pleases the Pope, and Eric right. calls in Michelangelo to talk about this Sistine or this Last Supper that he's created, right?
Right.
And he's like, you know, he's questioning him, like, why are there three Christs? It works, man. And lose the donkey, right? And then that's he's like, great. Well, maybe this, and there was only 12 apostles. You've got like 30 people in this painting. Right? And he's he's like, look, I want one Christ and 12 apostles by Thursday next, or you don't get paid.
Oh, that is so classic. Yeah, one. I'm going to have to go look that one up. I have like the box set of Monty Python somewhere. I got to go back and find that one because I don't remember that one.
I think it's a live one. It's one of the ones they did.
Oh, okay.
The and then at the end of it, he says, you know, I may not know much about art, but I know what I like. Yeah. Well, on that note, I think we can wrap it up here. So if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that? And sure, can you tell us what you're working on next?
Yeah. Well, I put out a quick version of my caffeine tracker recap recently. And that is just a little app on the App Store that I have out there. Hopefully going to do some more iOS 15 stuff with it soon. I didn't have a chance to work on it too much in the summer, but that'll be out there. Release notes happens every Monday, and you can find that at releasenotes.tv. You can find me at josie.design at jhplinski on Twitter, and I'll spell that for you. CIEPLINSKI. Josie on micro.blog and that kind of stuff. Glass and places like that. Yeah, I couldn't get Josie on Twitter. I joined too late. And that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I was too dumb. I could have probably got Tim or Tim M or something like that. But I just went with my name and then realized, oh, well, I could have done something clever. But what are you going to do? Anyway, so that being said, I'm Tim Mitra, TimMitra on the Twitter machines where you'll find me. And before we go, I'm just going to ask people to click right about here to subscribe for this video. Yeah, because, you know, I'm trying to get the audience pick up. Apparently, I found out I have to have 1,000 people following the show just subscribing before they'll let me put the MTJC merch on the page, right?
Wow.
So I'm looking at all these other guys. Well, how come they've got merch on their pages? And that's why.
That's how. Okay. But,
apparently there's some sort of, I'm going to investigate, there's some sort of divide between Redbubble and Teespring in terms of Teespring seems to be moving more towards, they want to deal with the big players. That's the rumor. Anyway.
Interesting.
Yeah. That being said, Mike's going to do the, this is me cueing Mike. He's going to do the voiceover and we'll say thanks for being on the show. Oh, and you will get your fifth MTJC jacket to you soon.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Anytime.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at mtjc.fireside.fm. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC, and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Once again, the podcast Twitter account is at MTJC_podcast. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Anyway, cool. Yeah. Thanks for being on the show again. Are you recording time. With the break notes again for this next thing that James is doing?
Oh, what's he doing? Oh, he's doing some new songs or whatever, right? He has his studio bass player he used on his album or whatever.
Okay, right.
And he said, like, he's got first dibs, obviously. He said, but he hasn't been getting back to me. He said, if I'm in a pinch and I need a bass player, would you record with me? I said, absolutely. I said, but I understand, you know, go with who you're familiar with and you're a longtime player. But if that guy refuses, then yeah, I guess I'm next on deck. So I would like to do that because I had a blast. Yeah,
we're all right now. Just, we got the song and it's all of us conditional breakpoints, I call this, right?
Right.
We're just doing a recording right now, so yeah. After like tonight, after we get off the call here, I'm probably going to do my tracks and them in. Cool.
Oh, enjoy that.
Yeah. Alrighty, and thanks again for being on the show. We'll talk to you later.
Anytime. All
okay. Right. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.